Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Sam Ma. I actually got it right, I think. I asked him before. It's not spelled like that. He is a highly acclaimed Australian. Yes, I'm talking to somebody from Australia. It's so cool. Drummer and percussionist, and has garnered worldwide attention playing something called a handpan. He's going to play something a little later for us. His music mixes minimalism, pop culture, and electroacoustic. I want to talk about that influences. He is self-taught, which is even cooler. And he is coming to us from, is it Fremantle? Yes, oh, yeah, so you got it right. Fremantle, Western Australia. It is now 6:30 in the evening for me, 7:30 the next day for him. Sam, I want to thank you for your time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to have a chat.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you, like I ask all my guests, you didn't just wake up and go, I think I'm going to play the sandpan and the drums and be in music. What was that serendipity? Because this is a spiritual philosophy. Universal mind, spirits, and angels. Serendipities, accidents, coincidences. Where did this thing kept pushing going? Where was that serendipity, that accident, that coincidence, that going, I better go this way, because every time I try not to, it's pushing me that way?
Well, it's kind of a, in a way, it's a long story, but to cut it short, I guess I grew up in a very isolated, small part of Australia, very far away from anything. And as a result of that, long distance travel was just a part of my life. So music was always intertwined within that. My family, our bonding experience was all centered around music. So I used to wake up very early in the morning and watch a program called Rage, which we have over here, which is basically the weirdest and most wonderful music film clips that exist, all compressed into one. Yeah. One late night TV show. And my sister had a crush on a local drum teacher, and that never came to fruition. So we always had this drum kit lying around. So I would be in there just playing along to this Rage program. So I got into drumming that way, and it really became, I guess, a part of expression or releasing any sort of tension that I had as an angsty teenager. But the handpan just came along, like literally someone sent me a video, and it was just this very, very strong, overwhelming obsession. And I think a huge part of that was because of the scarcity of the instrument at the time. There was only 4 or 5 people making these things. So it was a supply demand thing. I just needed to get my hands on one. And, you know, after the time where I finally got one, I realized how powerful this thing was as far as drawing people in because of its sound quality, because of the shape and the unexpected sound that it makes, this beautiful resonant frequency that it makes. It just seemed to draw people in. So I realized I had quite a power. That was it. It drew me in. It was speaking to me.
The first time you heard it, you didn't even own it yet. And it's like, I need to get one.
Yeah,
so what's the background? I'm sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, the background, it was basically a byproduct of a couple of people in Switzerland, Felix and Sabine, I can't remember their surname. They were basically tuning the Trinidad steel pans. There was this weird sort of movement in Switzerland. For some reason, steel bands became a very popular thing. So they were the official tuners of that country. And I think they were just experimenting. They live up in the hills outside of Bern. And it just became a byproduct as they were experimenting how to tune these instruments. So that was the origin story. And then a few people got their hands on them, and it very slowly sort of drifted through the internet. It was very much an internet instrument. Videos would leak out, and people that would come into contact with them would just have a complete obsession the same way I did. And then because the process to actually get one was so difficult, you'd have to write a letter, and most people were waiting a year or 2 years. I waited 2 years from the moment I saw a video between the time that I actually received one. So I think that sort of grows the desire to have one of these things in a way, because it sounds so beautiful in a video or in the internet, but if you haven't actually physically stood next to one and heard it that way, it's just it's an event that you just cannot wait for. And it really sucked me in hard.
Very cool. When I listened to it, so just to talk to the listeners, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to Sam, like I do a lot of guests, but this is really
going to the subconscious imaginational mind, going to your soul knowledge, understanding that this is something that pulled him in. And instead of pushing away, he waited 2 years. He was determined, and this is coming, and this took him on a whole life's trajectory. Obviously, you didn't have any idea where it was going to take you, correct?
No, I mean, at the time, I just wanted one because I thought it was cool. But I think in the back of my mind, I knew that I could do something with it that I couldn't see anyone else doing. So coming at it from more of a, from my drumming knowledge, I could see the potential of the instrument. And I noticed that, wow, here's this thing. It's very new. There's not that many people approaching it from rhythmic point of view. They're all sort of just floating around on it, maybe more in a melodic or improvisational type of way.
Oh.
So I saw the potential of it. And I also, I think at the time I was very burnt out with everything that I was doing in my life for various reasons. And I did see the potential of this instrument becoming almost an outlet for me and something that would be easy to travel with. And I was kind of putting two and two together. I was like, well, if I think I'm going to be good at it and I think I can travel with it, then potentially this could make my way around the world just by busking. I think a lot of people naturally fall into the busking realm with the handpan.
Wait,
purely because of...
Explain the term. What do you mean?
Busking?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, okay. Okay. So busking is basically live street performance.
Oh.
Sitting out on the street, hat upside down.
Got it.
Playing for the people put money in.
Okay.
And I realized when I did eventually receive the handpan that it was a perfect tool for this because it just had a way of bringing people in. And speaking of communication, it doesn't matter where I was in the world when I was traveling with this thing, I didn't have to try and talk to a person. I would just sit down and play and all of a sudden these connections would form. The amount of sort of adventures and human kindness I received because I was just sitting on the street playing the handpan to the street, it was overwhelming. I realized it was a very powerful tool of communication.
I was just about one of the questions, coincidentally, what do you want to communicate with your music? You just answered that because there's something with universal language. It's you don't even have to speak the language. You can be poor, rich, doesn't matter any possible way in your life, any country, any, you could have a, if there were aliens coming from Mars, they would be in track. I mean, music has a frequency that just touches our souls and makes our minds and puts us in a way that you could close your eyes. There's again, talking to my audience, you got to go on there, check him out. And how you spell his last name is Maher. It's Ma, pronounced Ma, but it's Sam, Maher. And click on the thing where he did in the New York subway. I think there's two of them, but there's one where he's sitting on a chair against the wall with a beard and everything. And I didn't realize what you're saying because it was very cool. He had it so nicely set up. It's when you played it, I actually, well, maybe because I'm a musician also, but I think anybody would connect with it. I don't think you don't have to be creative, anything. You just connect with it. I felt the hair on my, I don't have any hair in my head, but I have hair on my arms and it went up because I'm like, your facial expressions, your body language was more of the sandpan was, you weren't playing it, it was playing you. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much for those kind words.
It was amazing. We tried to get hooked up here a little while ago, but he had some other things going on. So when you're communicating this and you're actually doing this because you've been traveling, you know, getting more business going for yourself. I mean, when you're doing these recordings in studio, can you still have that same emotion come out? Is it hard to do it on a recording side? I mean, because I'm, you know, it's like, you play guitar, I guess, and any instrument, I guess, even a piano, you know, you could have the foot pedal and the emotion. But in this one, it's so different and so unusual. Do you have any difficulty getting that emotion across on a recording?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's funny that you're mentioning this because I guess that New York subway piece, it was smack bang in probably one of the most memorable times of my life. You know, I was traveling around, I was surviving off the money I was making on the street. I was 15 months into a backpacking trip, which was mainly in South America, but I'd run out of money. So I went to New York to hit the subways. So, you know, I was in this very, it was a very tumultuous time, but it was very rewarding and music was just daily for me then. So that instrument that I was playing, I only received 2 or 3 days before. I was traveling with a different one.
Wow.
So it was not calculated at all. It was literally the instrument showing me the way to play. I think the beautiful thing about the handpan is that it's tuned to a scale. So that governs what you can do with it. It's not like you can hit a bum note or unless you're playing with multiple pans and trying to do a chromatic thing, you play what notes are there. So I've said this so many times, but in many, many ways, the instrument directs you to its chord structures and its color. And it was a pure moment of improvisation. I think the guy that filmed it just saw me busking and said, "Hey, I want to take you somewhere where the acoustics are nice and I've got all my gear." So
yeah, the acoustic was perfect.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a beautiful station. The instrument itself wasn't actually a great instrument. It doesn't have much resonance, but the station that I was in, it was the curvature of the roof, like everything about it just reverberated the right way. And it was a pure moment of improvisation and emotion, I think. And that really, really comes across in the video. So to answer your question, that is really hard to capture when you're sitting in a studio, super calculated, trying to recreate something that doesn't have the conditions that I had during that New York time.
Okay.
So I think after that clip went viral, it was very much a pursuit of mine to create something as magic. And I feel like I have done that, but it hasn't had that sort of burning energy behind it because the scenario that I was in warranted that sort of power, you know?
Right. Well, it's interesting because when you try to force, not that you're forcing, but you know what I mean. You're trying to recreate that energy is gone. It's done.
Yes.
And you've got to find another place. And when I've noticed when I'm calm and I relax, do a lot of praying and meditating for myself in this philosophy, and it comes naturally. For me, it's the piano. And I'll hear a song. And I used to think this, like, oh, that sounds like the song I just heard. And then I played it. I'm like, it doesn't sound anything like that. In my mind, it does. And then I'm playing it. I'm like, oh. And, you know, and I got lyrics and I'm singing to it. And all my seminars now, I'm bringing my guitar and a portable piano because, you know, they're what? $100 now. They don't sound great. But of course, my wife always tells me, goes, no one knows the difference. Just you do. So I bring it to my seminars. I played at the beginning. I played at the end. I played at the middle. And I'm doing my teachings and the philosophy. And people love it because it's music is just, if it's coming off you as a natural thing, and your energy is always different. You know, you play a lot. And, you know, whether you're doing public speaking, whether you're even just going to have a job, your energy is not the same every day. And if you get in tune with that and plug into the mind and however you do it, the soul knowledge, whatever you want to call it, and you figure it out, okay, it's not that way. Don't force it, because anytime I force it, it gets worse. And usually nobody knows the difference, only you do. But I love that, because when I heard that, you'll definitely have another one. There's not even a question in my mind. I know you do. And I just a suggestion from my end of my belief system, just let it go. Don't try and recreate anything. And you probably figure that out. Because when you're looking for it, it doesn't happen. When you're not looking for it, it's kind of like a relationship or a job. Suddenly you're like, oh, I've been praying on this, I've been meditating, I've been thinking about it, I'm writing it down. Oh, you know what? If it happens, it's fine. If I go on a few interviews or I go on 500 dates, maybe the 501st one is going to work. Hey, you know, when it'll happen, it'll happen. Then it happened, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely.
But just, I love the beauty and how you're communicating through that. So energy-wise, when you're imagining this in your mind and you're playing, I don't know if you can describe it, but what are you trying to communicate to people when you're playing? What do you want what kind of image do you want to create from that emotion? I know there's all different songs you play, but what kind of emotion are you trying to do when you're playing it that they can feel?
I really, I love the feeling of melancholy, where it's kind of, you know, it's ultimately a resolute or happy feeling, but with a touch of sadness, you know, a touch of disaster, because I guess that's just what life is like. And I think that about everything. Like, the best films for me end with that melancholic feeling, and maybe that's just my base level of happiness is melancholy, but who knows.
I'm generally
a happy guy. Yeah, exactly. But really, there's a combination of things. When I was busking during those days, I don't busk anymore. But when I was doing that, it was very clear to me what resonated with people and what didn't. And I found that when you're sort of going on one trajectory, almost in a mysterious or sad type of mood, if we're talking about emotions and then flipping that into something happy, that switch is what really, really drew people in. And I learned that earlier on, and I kind of figured out what tempos resonate with people depending on where you are. So really, it was very environmental for me, what I wanted to convey. It depended on a few factors. It depended on the pace of the street, who was observing, who was listening, and also how I was feeling on that day. So it really fluctuates from day to day. There's a feeling that I get now that I'm more sort of in solitude and doing this away from humanity. There's a feeling I get when I know a piece is right, and I can't really put my finger on what that is, but it's a very strongly resonating thing. When it switches on, I'm like, yes, this is it. This is what I'm going for. And I've gotten into the process of just recording everything, even when I'm rehearsing.
Yes.
And listening back in, you know, in a different mindset and going like, that thing, that's what I need to do. It's hard to put my finger on what that thing is, but it's a feeling, and it overwhelms me when it's there.
Well, it gets your hair up. It affects your cardiovascular system. It affects everything about you. That's one thing I learned the hard way. If you have an idea in your head, I don't care if you want to hum it because you're on a bus or something. Turn the record button. I have a memos button on the phone. Do it because once it's gone for. I play some upstairs on my piano because I get, you know, you get the analog and now digital, you know, I got a grand piano, but it's got the digital attachment to it. So I don't always have time to do that. So I just turn the phone on, play it. I don't care what it sounds like because then I play it. I just wrote a new song and on the guitar and I'm like, oh, I'll remember how I changed these notes or that inflection that I said. No, I'm not. I'm like, I don't trust my mind. I turn the damn record on. I don't care what it sounds like. I had to play it like four times to get it right where it started because if I didn't play at a downstroke or I didn't play the note right and I didn't say that word at that particular time, it didn't sound the same. So yeah, you've got to, whether it's music, whether it's an idea, whether it's a concept, whether it's a feeling, yeah, it is undescribable. But that's what makes the difference. When you were doing this in front of people with your hat out, you connected the energy with them. And that energy changed depending on me or the next person. And when people are listening, absolutely. I'd love to hear it live. I'd love to hear it live. Unfortunately, I'm not going to fly halfway around the world and come back home the next day.
I'll be over there eventually.
If you're ever here, please. I mean, it would be wonderful. I was telling Sam about my musical, and it's just there's so many sounds that he could do in this thing. But there's so many emotions. And I, like I said, I encourage the audience, go check it out in New York. He's got a whole bunch of other ones out there. Check out his website. It's a very basic, simple website. Tells what it is, where he's from, and why he did it, and got some videos. So I want to ask you another question. I already did the New York, got the hand pan. I said sand pan. I stand corrected. I said the wrong name. How do you connect with your creative flow? How do you, I know what I do, and the audience has heard it a million times. I want to hear it from you. I learned from listening. What is something that gets that flow? Because your energy is not, we've all done this. You wake up, the frequency, I call it frequency. Your frequency's off that day. You feel a little lightheaded or you're tired, whatever. Now, for me, I play the piano or the guitar. Those are my two best ones, but more normally the piano. Most of the time, it snaps you out of it. But I really have to go there. I have to feel it. I can't do it if I'm forcing it. So what's that flow? What gets you moving every day to do the music? Because you're doing this full time now. So what kind of pushes you in that direction?
I know exactly what you mean. I actually had 2.5 years completely off playing during COVID years, because I think there was a lot of, so this is a bit of a sidebar, but there was a lot of pressure to be creative because all of a sudden we had nothing but time. And under those constraints, there was absolutely no creativity in me. And I found it such a bizarre duality of things. You know, it's like, oh, all of a sudden I have nothing but time, but nothing's coming out.
Right.
So I've thought about this a lot. Like, what is it that makes you have that flair and that inspiration? And I think for me personally, it's about absorbing other things that I'm inspired by, whether that be listening to music that's pushing a boundary, or, you know, it could be any sort of artistic form, like observing painting or watching a great film, or, you know, it could be whatever, cooking, you know, like just anything that sparks that sort of like childlike excitement in me. If I'm in that state of mind, that's when I know it's okay for me to sit down. As soon as I sit down and actually approach the instrument from that childlike excitement, that's when things will just naturally progress. I've also found that because I was self-taught, I never really had that sort of formal education as far as drumming goes. But in the recent years, I've been quite excited about like going back and almost trying to teach myself music theory and teaching myself rhythm and sitting down and reading notation, which I always used to snuff at when I was younger, but now I understand the value, you know. And I think like really dissecting something and approaching it like that has also inspired me, because I feel like I've done things in reverse. So that has really, really helped me a lot as well, to just get me slowly back in, because instead of trying to think of this grand picture, you're just dissecting something down to the minutiae and you're like, well, I'm just going to figure out how to play this rhythm and see what comes out of that. So it depends. The answer to your question is it depends, but generally I have to be in that very inspired state of mind, which is usually triggered by a great record or something of the like for me.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because there's certain things. I have a whole world designed in my mind. So I have this whole thing with the philosophy that I have an ocean, I have a bridge, I have a giant motion picture screen in my subconscious imaginational mind. I have a river, I have a bridge, I have a cave, I have a waterfall. I can go on and on and on. And these things that I'm in all the time, and I'm really working hard for me, for philosophy, to get it in there. And there's a lot of distractions. And it's interesting, the least distracted time in your life, and you had zero. And it's because, you know, we have to have contact with humans. We have to have contact with, the energy's not the same. We're doing it now over the internet. This is one of the things that are great on the internet, but most of the stuff on the internet is garbage. It's not teaching you anything. It's just consuming you with noise. And if you like the noise, go for it. I don't like the noise. I like something focused. I want something that I can play. And when I feel it, and like the new guitar song I just wrote, you know, I'm self-taught also. When I was younger, very similar. My mom was bringing me to piano lessons and I refused to practice. I was in a choir and in high school. The reason why I'm laughing is because the teacher said, I'm going to give you a C. I go, why? You don't practice. You don't show up to any of the events, but you've got talent. I'm just passing you on that. And I still didn't do it. I mean, I had to, you know, learn the notes and sing it back to somebody and, you know, without all the, you know, and all this other stuff. And I learned it, but I never put any effort into it. And it's funny you mentioned that, because those might have been more restrictive in that little bubble as you're talking about, that this is the way it's supposed to be. And not that you can't do that, but I think coming from the outside in, because I've always thought, I know now, I understand now, that if I ever choose at some point to get a little bit of theory, anything, not just writing the notes, but some kind of theory, that will change the music, that will make it better. It'll create more things, that childlike thing you're talking about. I think you're right. I think we all go back in our subconscious imaginational mind. The conscious is the informational, subconscious the transformational. And we were a little, maybe to like 4 or 5 years old, we played with the pans. I used to play with matchbox cars. And I'd imagine. That's all I did was imagine. And then you were told, pay attention. Stop that imagination. Now, I'm not knocking it. We had to learn how to read. We had to learn how to write. We had to learn how to go to the bathroom. We had to learn how to do everything. But because it got shut off, that conscious and subconscious just became a mirror of each other. And that imagination's never used. And where did imagination? We wouldn't be, forget the internet. There would be no planes. There'd be no landlines for phones. Those of you young ones that are listening that's not familiar with it, they used to be plugged into the wall. When the power went out, the phone still was working. Flashlights, you didn't use a phone. Somebody had to invent this. At some point, somebody was sitting on the ground until they came up with the idea and imagination of something called a chair. Your pants were falling down. They were using string. How about a belt? You know, people don't think about this, because if you know Albert Einstein, Albert Einstein said the imagination is this, the preview of coming attractions. Because those things that appear in your mind, and you don't have to close it, your eyes to do it. I am right now. But I have these things that I see when I play music and when I do the philosophy and when I do this other things that I'm doing, all surrounded by this belief system that I've created. It just, lightens my mind up. It takes all the noise because I've eliminated negativity. I don't have negativity in my life anymore. If you're a negative person in my life, if I have to deal with you, I limit my time and I'm not insulted. It just doesn't work. If you want to focus on something negative, that's yours. But for me, I get nothing because I'm not going to have my, because that negativity then runs my mind. Then the physical being starts getting indigestion. You start coughing, you're burping, you're not sleeping. I went too many years with that nonsense. It's too many years. Mm-hmm. But it was a learning experience and it made who I am and what I am. You were saying here, so the flow, I love that explanation. Teaching. So you mentioned on your website, I saw your teaching and passing it forward. How are you doing that? And what are you doing that for? What was the thing that, obviously you're easy to communicate with, and you obviously have no problem with getting that out of what you're doing. How are you teaching? What are you teaching? Are you teaching the handpan? Or are you just kind of teaching an all-around creative atmosphere?
Yeah, I think it's teaching the handpan. And there's been a steadily increasing demand for it as this instrument becomes an instrument. Because for the last 20 years, it's really just been shoved aside as this niche internet type thing. It's funny. It's a viral instrument. It's very rare to find a new instrument these days.
Good point.
If you think back to, you know, the guitar, for example, with all that history that goes along with it, you know, at this moment, this instrument is in its absolute infancy and it's just starting to border on that point where it's almost in its production stage. There's a lot of manufacturers starting to mass produce them. They're no longer this niche handmade tool that's taking months and months for every individual instrument. So people have figured out the recipe. They've figured out to pump them out quickly. And I think what comes with that is a huge influx of people that just get one for the first time and realize, other than some YouTube videos, there's nowhere to learn. So there's a really great platform online called Master the Handpan, which is run by a great player and friend over in France, David Charrier. And he sort of created this online subscription-based platform where he's got his own modules that you can sign up for, but he's also invited some well-known players to come in and teach. So that was kind of my first experience with the idea of teaching, which is funny because I'm self-taught and I approach the instrument very differently to other players around the world because of my isolation and because of my backstory. So it's been a great exercise in actually dissecting my own playing and figure out, you know, what was it about my drumming history that made me approach the handpan in this way? How do I approach coming up with melodies? What's my hand technique? I have a very different hand technique to others. And, you know, the more that I've traveled around the world, realizing that people have this same obsession that I had 10 years ago when I discovered it, how can I then influence those people the way that I was influenced when I was watching the two or three videos that existed at the time? And it's amazing because I go around and people have learned that New York subway piece like to a T, you know, being one of the more popular pieces floating around the internet. But it's just incredible to me that an improvised moment has spread so far around the world to the point where I go to somewhere like China, for example, where I was a couple of months ago. And you've got all these Chinese people that I have no relations with in my everyday life that are playing a very small moment of time in my life that was just captured. It just happened to be captured.
Right.
So yeah, I guess it's a lot of the time it's just teaching my approach. Like, how do I sit down and then create a piece of music with this? And a lot of it is fundamental rhythmic stuff. But I also leave a lot of time for improvisation. I almost learn from the people that are learning from me. And it's this dynamic, alive thing that happens over the course of 2 days.
Very, very cool. A question. Can we hear any of your stuff in any TV shows or movies or ads or anything that, not that people would necessarily know, but because it's, well, no, they would. Well, no, they wouldn't, because I never heard of this instrument until I talked to somebody about it. And they said, oh, you got to listen to this. I listened to a sand? What? No, a hand. I'm like, oh, a hand pan. What the heck is that? They're playing a hand and they're hitting it on a pan? What are they talking about? And then she gave me the link to yours and it was the subway. And I'm like, I just sat there going, whoa, this is unbelievable. So how are you transferring this into getting it more out there with people so they are more familiar in the mainstream?
So the main sort of idea that I try to express is you've basically got an orchestra and one instrument. You've got, you know, there's a melodic factor. There's all these rich harmonics. There's a rhythmic section. There's a part of the pan that I sort of consider the drum kit, quote unquote. There's a lot of different timbres you can get out of it. It's basically, there's endless potential. And in just one very portable, very easy to play as a beginner instrument. So I think that the potential of the handpan is kind of untapped. There's a few people really, really pushing the boundary. I've been in recent years, well, sort of since I've come back, which has only been in the last year, I've been really heavily processing the acoustics of the pan and in Ableton and layering those sounds back behind my live playing to try and create more soundscapes or ambience. Yeah, I think there's a New York Times podcast that I listen to called The Daily, which is it's just a daily news podcast. And I don't know who does the music for it, but they use so much handpan.
Really?
Yeah, and it's really cool. So in many ways, it is starting to, well, I wouldn't really call that pop culture, but it's starting to feed back into popular music.
Right.
There's a lot of dance artists and sort of boundary pushing producers that I like, Fortet being one of them that has used pan. So it's definitely becoming into the more global conscious. And it's always surprising where I hear the sounds. I think there's huge potential to use it in cinematic film. I mean, it's got the same sort of frequency range as the female human voice. So, you know, as a solo instrument, it could be quite powerful. There's a guy called Manu Delago who plays for an incredible Icelandic musician called Björk, who's one of my biggest influences, and he's using it a lot with her music, which is very edgy and always pushing the limitations of what music should be. So I think it's an exciting time. I think it's in this like really flourishing experimental stage, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Like, I can imagine, you know, harmonics, harmonizing with yourself. You play one track, then you play another track. And one of the things I like to do is I play one part of the piano and then I play it again on another track. And then I hear in my head it as another, because while I'm playing it, I can hear it. So I have to go back and record that. And then I put that back in and I put that over the next one. And I started at this point, and you know, next thing you know, I got four tracks of piano going, and then I add drums, then all this stuff. But it starts with one instrument, and you start hearing it build, and it builds intensity. Yes. And suddenly, and then it comes down and goes back to the, you know, best songs I've ever heard is you start with a powerful beginning, got a real good middle, and then you get to the end, but it ends where it started, you know, similar to where it does. It's kind of like somebody told me one time, a writer told me, said the best sentence that you write, if you're a really good writer, you just need to read the first line and the last line of that paragraph, that will tell you everything that's on in the middle.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a fantastic thing to think about.
And it's so true. It's true with music. It's true with life. It's true with people. It's true with relationships. Because remember, we're talking about music, and music comes in all different forms. I love harmony. We see a group every year called Straight No Chaser out here in, they travel the US, they travel overseas too, and they're all harmony. They've been around since, I don't know, like 25 years. And we've been to them like 10 times. And I love their music. There's no real instruments. But the emotion at the end of their, we usually see them during the summer. We kind of hook down, and my wife and I. And we see them during Christmas time. And they see all the Christmas music. They see all the Hanukkah music. They're being fun. And it's really good. But at the end, they sing Oh Holy Night with the microphones down. They said, this is how it started in Indiana. I'm getting stuff on my arm right now. Indiana University, this is where it started. And the whole auditorium is, you could hear a pin drop and you can hear them singing. It's like, this is what it sounds like. This is what we heard before we put it on recordings and microphones. And I think that's what's important. If anything, we learned with everybody not talking or whatever for that period of time, you cannot, I've said that already in the interview, we cannot communicate through this medium. It's a great thing to add to life. It's a great thing to do what Sam and I are doing. But to communicate, I would, if he was closer, I'd fly down, take him to dinner, he'd play me some music, and I'd fly back home. Because the emotion that I hear in the video, and the emotion you're going to hear in a few minutes at the end of the interview, he's going to play something. And it's just incredibly, he's got emotion. And anything, whether it's a reading, a writing, a music, it doesn't matter. Painting, it just speaks to people and everybody gets something different. Some, you know, when I place things or I start doing my presentations, I started doing it in March of 2023. And I've had people coming up at the health club I'm doing now going, you really made a difference at that last seminar you just did. I'm like, talk to me. Tell me what I did. Well, I'm talking differently to my grandmother because you talked about the philosophy. You played the song. And then I'm like, thank you. I'm like, wow. I go to bed with a giant smile on my face. I'm like, you just changed. You don't always know because I guarantee you the music you're playing and the things that I'm doing, nobody's going up to you most of the time. But if you do get somebody come going, Sam, you inspired me, my music, you know, someday somebody's going to be doing an interview and they're going to be real famous and go, well, it's not Mayer. I don't know how you say it, but it's M-A-H-E-R. That guy, he taught me this class. There was, you know, cause it, and you're like, wow, you know, so it really is something that speaks. And that's why I was really looking forward to talking with you. But before we go, what kind of aphorism or, you know, some positive thing can you tell the audience that would inspire them to do what they're doing, to find their calling, to find their soul knowledge, to follow that path that you did, something similar to what you did, but in your own way, something positive.
I think it's sort of similar to the testament that you said before is you just have to let everything go and trust that if the intentions are right and you go for something, that it will fall into place. That's something that I've learned very strongly in life, that sometimes if you're in your comfort zone, and you have a desire to take a risk and to do something outside of the box, you have to just follow that and do it because it will fall into place. Absolutely. Many people are scared to get outside of that comfort zone, but I've realized that risk taking and embracing being uncomfortable and embracing that change has always paid off for me. And it still pays off today. And it's been a very rewarding lesson to learn is to push yourself into that world of unknown. Great thing to do.
Thank you. That was a blessing to hear because it's like, and again, it doesn't make Sam and I different or better than anybody else, but we're just kind of like, we're following our belief. We're following what we're doing. And it is scary. I don't care. And I know, I'm sure you agree with this. You've been doing this for a while. And then you find out like, oops, I don't know this part. Somebody wants me to do this. It'll be okay. Because then you get used to it. It's almost like a drug. It's like, I'm waiting. I don't want to stay comfortable or in the automatic that long. I want something else to happen. And if you're really imagining that, because I can't tell you many people, one of the goals I have is I want to speak in front of 20,000 people. And my concept is I'm going to charge $1 for each person. It's all going to be donated. Every dollar that I'm going to speak on, and then it'll be part of the musical will be there. There'll be other people. It'll be at a stadium. And every dollar that's being brought in by each 20,000, all donated. I'm going to donate it to a charity of my choice, of my choosing. Because to me, it's like, I can picture it. I can't tell you how many times in my recording studio, I've talked to thousands of people. I've talked to you 100 times because I imagine these things. And without my imagination, I do it with my eyes open. I can picture them as clear as day. And my wife has told me since I started this live stuff I'm doing with the philosophy and music, she goes, you know, you told me about this and this, you just did it. But in my mind, I'm thinking I have to do it on a larger scale. It could be six people. It could be 60. It doesn't matter. She goes, check that mark off. I'm like, oh, because we think so big and we don't realize that it's the little things coming along the way, the learning time, the self-realizations, the self-experiences, the thing that you were doing with your hat out. If you didn't do that, you wouldn't understand different emotions you could do coming out of you now that you're doing it for a living. So it just, those different things you're thinking, man, this stinks. No, it doesn't. Take what you're doing and going, if it's pushing you that way. That's why I always ask at the beginning of the interviews, what was that serendipity, that coincidence, the accident said, keep going this way. And you keep not doing it and going, and you're waking up at 3 a.m. I'm like, why am I not doing this? All right, fine. I'll do it.
Totally.
So yeah, it's just amazing. So again, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate being here. I was just gonna touch on that a little bit. I can't remember who told me this, but it's been so powerful in my life to think of something that you want or an outcome that you desire, and to work to visualize backwards from that. So you think of all the steps in reverse, like, okay, so, you know, you want to talk in front of 20,000 people. So how do I hook that venue up? And, you know, you work backwards until you get back to where you are. And then the path is already there, you know, and that in itself is creativity. You know, that's creative thinking to a T. And I'm going to touch on another thing you said previously about play, like sort of being in that playful state. I think that is what breeds this very, very pure sense of creativity. You know, I have a young daughter now, she's almost two, and I've been reintroduced, almost seeing the world through new eyes of how important it is to, like, to just play. And that will teach you everything you need to learn. Like, that's how we learn as children, you know, we're climbing on rocks and we're trying to jump off, you know, we're playing. And that teaches us about gravity when we hurt our heads, you know? So yeah, I just wanted to get in with and say that little small piece.
No, that's a huge piece. And again, it goes back to these little things. And yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because when you start, you didn't know how to stand, you didn't know how to crawl, you didn't know how to go to the bathroom, didn't know how to run, you didn't know how to speak. I mean, how many times did you probably take your daughter? What the? Oh my God. Yeah.
She doesn't understand.
She doesn't understand. She doesn't understand anything. She doesn't understand food, mouth, nothing. Like, oh, just I call it discovery, awakened transformation in the philosophy, because you discover your mouth. You don't know what mouth is. You don't know what food is. And it awakens the senses. You just transform your life. And there's everything. You apply that. You're right. Seeing that and what you're doing and then going, wow, don't lose that. It's good to have the conscious mind stuff to make sure that you've learned gravity. You think you're going to forget it. You're not coming back. You're going straight down. So that mind, your conscious mind keeps you safe, but it also gives you limitations, because it's like, you can't do that because you need to do this, this, and this. And following that and not being silly or stupid, not, you know, you're not, you know, foreclosing on your home to do something, doing something more of understanding that you're not overnight sensations. You know, everybody's on the internet, right? I'm going to make $1 million in 6 months. That's nice. What is it really about? Money is not, as far as I know, when you leave, you can't take any of this stuff with you. So make it worthwhile while you're here. Make a difference. Really tap into it. There's so many things that are out there for each individual. You're the only one that knows it. And if it's something that's calling you, do it as a side job for a while and then have it take over. And I love that idea. Start at the end and work backwards, because you're picturing the outcome. But then you start, when somebody goes, hey, Sam, I want you to do this. And you're like, whoa. And it's not exactly what you imagined, but pretty darn close. And you're like, whoa. You don't say that, but you're thinking in your mind while they're talking to you. Like, oh, really? Tell me about it. Then you get off the phone and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's almost like brainstorming the puzzle pieces that need to mold together to get to that end zone.
I'm using that as a bumper sticker if I put it on my car. All right, I'm going to have Sam again. Thank you very much for being on the show. I'm going to do my regular shtick, as we call it, my saying at the end, but it's not going to be the normal ending, because Sam is going to play something on his own. And just, you know, he's going to introduce the song and then he'll say goodbye. He'll be the one ending the show more than I am. So after this ending, he's going to play, and then that'll be the end of the interview. So stay tuned, and you've got to love this. You're going to love what he's going to do. And so I always say this, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. And I won't say see you next time right now, because I want you to just listen while this goes right into Sam's piece. But I will say, see you next time.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me, Philip. I really appreciate being on this show. And I really appreciate being able to play a song for you guys. This one's a new piece, which I play over four ham hands. I've got a chromatic set here in front of me and a fair few gizmos. So I do a little bit of live processing where I capture the audio of the ham pan and then feed it back into my computer and process the sound over the top of this piece. It's sort of a new technique that I've been enjoying playing with now that I'm playing on bigger stages. It's currently unnamed, so I am open to suggestions. Feel free to send me on some ideas. This piece sort of really spoke to me. Coming out of that 2.5 year break. Here it goes. So there we have it. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a beautiful day.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.